Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, and welcome to episode 18 of Hometown Glory, your Spurs and Culture podcast. I'm Charlie, and today joined by Rosa and Tom. Today, we're going to recap the Everton drubbing, look over a vital point for Spurs women and a big few games ahead. We'll also preview the United game of the weekend and, of course, give out some culture recommendations. Tom, Rosa, good to talk to you both. Spurs are fun again. 5-0 versus Everton. Rosa, tell me what you loved about that match.
Well, can I just quickly tell you what I didn't love, which is...
With the bad. Yeah, of course.
No, it's not. It's just for me. Well, do you know what? I'm just going to say you're welcome to everyone because I did not go to that game, as you both know. I had a ticket and it was so cold. And I was like, I've got a bad feeling about this game. I don't really want to spend an hour and a half getting there and an hour and a half getting back and being like miserable and cold and lonely. So I gave my ticket to Ollie and he had a great time. And I felt like an absolute fool at home as the goals just rained in. But aside from that, so I like to think that that was my contribution to it because it was fairly inevitable that once I decided not to go.
On behalf of all Spurs fans, we thank you, Rosa.
Yeah, that's good. And quite right too. But it was just a glorious evening, wasn't it? I have to say, I just wasn't expecting it at all. And looking at Everton's defending and how they set up, I probably shouldn't have been as surprised as I was. But it was just a delight.
I think after I caught most of their game versus City the week before, where they looked quite decent. They defended really well. They looked a little bit like we did against City, sort of sprightly on the break. And, you know, they do have some decent players. And they're one of those strange teams that when I looked at their lineup before the game and I was like, Calvert-Lewin, you know, Van der Beek, Decore I like, Richarlison, obviously. I think the youngster Gordon is a really good player and I thought he showed himself really well throughout, sort of, you know, even when they were really being hammered, I thought he was the only one that really kept going. And you sort of think, oh, similarly to what Rosa was saying, oh God, maybe this is one of those sort of Wolves, Southampton type evenings. But, and even the start, you know, I think I was sort of messaging a bit hacked off in the first 10, 15 minutes when we couldn't sort of get the ball off them for a while. And then as soon as we scored, they just seemed to completely give up the ghost. Tom, I take it you were thrilled as well.
Yeah, I had a great night. I was on a pretty bad run of games. I seem to have missed a lot of the best games this season. I couldn't make Man City first game of the season. I ducked out of Liverpool and West Ham before Christmas because everyone was worried about getting Omicron. So that was tough. And then, yeah, I was at Wolves, Southampton, Chelsea in the Cup. So I really couldn't take another terrible night. at White Hart Lane. So thank God it was, yeah, it was a hell of a lot of fun. Everton, like you said, on paper, Everton's midfield and forwards, at least going forward, they look pretty good, like on paper. Decore's good. Dominic Calvert-Lewin could be brilliant on his day. And that Anthony Gordon, like you said, he was potentially had the best game of any of their players. But yeah, we totally dominated them and it was an extremely fun day out. I mean, we've now, last two games, we're now 9-0 up, aren't we, on aggregate. It was funny because Leeds was so open, but at least Leeds had some chances and they probably could have scored a couple. I don't remember Ugo having to do much, to be honest. So yeah, Everton were abysmal, but we were really good. My favourite thing, I think, was the Kane finish on for the fifth goal. It was that sort of side-footed finish that if you were watching other less skillful footballers or if it kind of hadn't gone in, you'd have presumed he'd miskicked it, really. But the way he sort of cushioned it on the side of his foot and the finish, that was just wonderful. And it was great because I sit in the south stand. Obviously, we got three goals in the first half quite far away from us. I had no idea the first goal was an own goal until I saw a tweet later, because even in the stadium, they announced it as Harry's goal, I think, didn't they?
They did.
And coming back from half time, I had a bizarre experience. As I walked up the gangway, I looked down at the pitch and everyone was about to kick off. And then the stadium announcer said, goal in the 46th minute from Sergio Reguilon. And I was like, this doesn't happen to Spurs and I never miss goals. So it was great to then get that fifth goal from Kane right in front of the south stand. The south stand went bonkers. And yeah, it was a great finish. And particularly him and Kulu had really good games, didn't they?
They did. Yeah, I think a moment for Kulu. It's a shame that Ash isn't here, as he has admitted himself to us. He needs to embark upon his Kulu little kind of I'm so sorry tour. Although I think that's unfair on Ash. I think we all thought Kulu potentially looked quite bad for the first few games.
He looked so nervous, didn't he, when he came on off the bench those first couple of times. And yeah, we all owe him a massive apology because he's already improved that front line so much.
It's interesting the difference it makes, isn't it? Because it was so noticeable. Obviously, he stayed on when some went off and Berg came on. But that the attack is just like so unbelievably more potent with him in it, because there are now like three players the defences have to worry about. Whereas, like, I'm sorry, Berg, when he comes on, that, you know, those two goals against Leicester aside, you're just thinking that's probably not going to happen again. We don't really have to worry about him too much. I think he had a great chance that he just like ballooned over the bar, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Kulu, not only, you know, he makes chances, he takes chances, you have to worry about him as well, which frees up more space for the other two. And it is amazing how quickly he's just got to grips with it all. I guess that's the difference when you arrive from Juve, right? As opposed to Dutch League, for example.
I think so. I mean, 21 as well. Just, you know, I think Billy pointed out to us, he's only a month older than Phil Foden, for example, which I think just, I suppose, like you say, Rosa, it speaks to his sort of education coming through Juve. And he had a good spell at Parma and Atalanta, who are a bit of a sort of talent factory. So he's had sort of good finishing schools before arriving here. I think one of the really, really, really exciting things about Kulu is the chemistry he seems to be building up with Matt Doherty as well. Because finally, after what feels like about 7.5 years, we seem to be getting a glimpse of Wolves' Matt Doherty. I mean, I think you could make a case for him being man of the match. I think... put forward that he didn't put a foot wrong.
His pass for the second Kane goal, the fifth goal, pass over the top was sublime. Like, it was kind of, you know, brilliant. It's certainly not the sort of pass a right back should really be playing, or you know that you'd expect a right back to be playing.
Certainly not our right backs.
Not our right backs. Yeah, he's so calm and skillful, isn't he, Kulu? And also, I think maybe he doesn't make those kind of breaking runs that Lucas makes. But on the ball, he does seem quite fast and doesn't seem to lose the ball very...
He's got really good close control. I always enjoy discovering what's going to be the... what is it? The cinch, like, no-nonsense moment of the match or whatever Spurs put out on through their many, many partners. And it was that little sort of shuffle he did to sort of skip by Richarlison to set up one of the sort of many, many chances. And that kind of reminded me just how good he was in that game at keeping the ball in tight spaces, holding people off. His first touch seems to be just that lovely thing where with every touch of the football, he seems to be just growing in confidence and sort of realising that he can do it in the Premier League and he's got nothing to worry about. Really, really lovely to see.
Is it crazy that he slightly reminds me of like early Kane in the way that he's not that fast, right? But he's pretty strong and his control is good and he can do that thing of holding onto the ball and kind of creating a chance out of nothing just by kind of shaking a defender off, not through speed, but strength and control and kind of persistence.
And a bit of intelligence as well. He seems like a really smart footballer.
Yeah, I was going to say he seems very calm and considered. Like you can see him looking for a pass and he definitely seems smart. And, you know, we're all fans of Lucas at times here, but that is the total opposite of the chaos you get from Lucas, you know. Kulu seems very calm. Talking about sort of early Kane as well, when he brought on Berg and took off Son, I mean, there seems to be something in Kane's contract that he can never be subbed off, really. Like, I was thinking, surely we're now going to rest Kane for the weekend.
And I guess he was on a hat-trick, though, at that point. So that's the only reason I can think.
Yeah, I mean, he was playing brilliantly, so I can understand why he'd keep Kane on as well. But what I thought might have happened there was that Kulu moved into the centre, and I was quite excited to see what he could do playing at, you know, in the middle there. Hopefully we'll see it at some point, although we've now got no cup games, obviously, so it's just...
No, just 12 cup finals, as I think we're now talking about them, aren't we? I think we should spend a minute talking about the other new boy from Juve as well. Obviously, Rodrigo Bentancourt came back into the team, and I, for one, never want to see him out of it for as long as he's at Tottenham Hotspur, because I think the difference in our play with that guy there versus, not to single out Harry Winks, but when Harry Winks is playing for Spurs, is just astonishing. I think the level of composure and calm and bravery he has on the ball to accept a pass wherever he is on the pitch, I think that kind of thing is infectious. And I think you can tell by the play of, I think Højbjerg sort of stepped it up playing around him. I think sort of rubbed off on him. I think Doherty as well, sort of that weight of pass that he's receiving from Bentancur versus the sort of passes he might be getting from sort of Winks or Højbjerg when he and Winks are playing together, I think is just sort of schools apart. We all love Rodrigo, don't we?
Yeah, so much. And I think, you know, it's a little bit rough on Winks in some ways because I think the confidence thing is so clear. And Winks has... You know, with good reason, but he also suffers quite a lot from the crowd sort of being on his back quite early. So if he misplaces a pass, there's groans all around the stadium. Whereas you just don't get that with Bentancur because we're all so excited to see him. And it's become clear to everybody that we need him so desperately. And so there's that sort of energy in the crowd for him as well. Now, obviously, he is a superior player, but that helps a lot, I think. I'm so interested to watch him play. I was watching just the short highlights earlier. And the amount of sort of the pitch that he covers, and he's just he's not afraid to go anywhere. He comes all the way back to defense to carry the ball all the way forward, and there isn't, and that's so encouraging for a defense as well. And I really, you know, I'm not gonna, you know, no one's ever gonna compare to Moussa Dembélé for me, but it is amazing to see a midfielder that clearly gives the defense confidence as well. It's been such a long time since we've had that.
Yeah, he sort of, it's like a mix of Dembélé, he sort of carries himself with a bit of Berbatov, I think, a kind of defensive mid-Berber, and how he sort of struts around that kind of lovely, sort of laconic way.
I think the Carrick-Berber sort of combo that you spoke about earlier, like in our group, is quite accurate, actually.
in that Berber way, he definitely looks like he would just light up a fag at half time and chill.
You deserve it, Rodrigo. Have one on me.
He seems so calm, so controlled. Like, he is the Musa replacement we've needed for quite some time, I think. And when we bought him, I remember reading that someone saying he was like brilliant off the ball. And I'm not really like a tactics nerd, so I think I was like, what does that even mean, off the ball? Like, it's, you're playing football, you know. It kind of confused me, but watching him, I can see totally what that means, because he reads the game brilliantly. He's clearly looking where the trouble's going to arise, where he can place a brilliant pass. And I thought towards the end of the game, I was slightly worried that Everton might nick a goal and we'd just not keep a clean sheet. But he did some brilliant breaking up of the play. I think there was a tactical foul he made near the end as well that was needed. He's just brilliant. And like you said, he's obviously our first choice centre mid now. He's improved Pierre. And I'm excited to see what him and Skip will look like as well, if Skip ever comes back.
Yeah, I want to keep the good times going. So I feel like we shouldn't dwell on Rose's sort of conspiracy theory that Oliver Skip won't be seen again this season, that she dared to air in our text group earlier today.
It's just Spurs fear. It's based on nothing more than that. So, you know, make of that what you will, I guess, everyone. Just one other thing about Bentancur is this like another reason I'm like, I feel so, so, so stupid for not going, because I think he is the kind of player it's great to watch when you're there. Because if he is working off the ball, that's not something the camera is necessarily going to follow.
Yeah,
but it's so fun to watch if you're there.
Yeah, I totally agree. Like I said, I was sort of baffled by that off the ball comment, but in the ground, you see how he covers the pitch brilliantly, and he's clearly looking all around him and reading the game really well, and just linking with other players so well.
Because he's not much like Kulusevski, I guess. He's not especially quick, but he just seems to sort of glide across the pitch in that really lovely way that very, very good central midfielders seem to manage to, like you say, just eat up the ground. And Tom, I noted you mentioned his sort of tactical fouling, which I'm sort of thrilled that we've got a kind of Uruguayan central midfielder that's been sort of raised at Boca and then Juve. And you would very much hope that someone with that kind of education would be able to come in and know when to sort of halt a fast break in its tracks with a little tug of the shirt or a cliff of the ankles. And he definitely has that in his locker. So I'm thrilled to see that.
Same with
and
Romero,
got away with it loads as well.
Yeah,
he
yeah.
got away
with yeah. it. Less so for Romero.
Romero did not. Did
Listen,
not
he got the ball.
Romero committed GBH from the
Chelsea. Yeah.
And I think that, I know he was a bit hacked off about coming off from what I saw, but fair play to Conte for taking him off on, what was it like? It wasn't even an hour, I don't think. But I think what Richarlison's like, I think he was just going to try and wind him up into getting a second yellow for the entire game, I think.
And we're going to need him for United so badly. So, yeah, that seems smart. And Sanchez didn't need to do a lot when he came.
No. Just away from Tottenham, but staying with Everton, are they going to go down? What do you guys reckon?
I really hope not. I don't think it's going to be them, to be honest. I think it'll probably be Leeds, is my feeling. Yeah, but just because I can't see it with Everton, and I'd actually be quite sad about it, even though, you know, it'd be funny because it's Frank, but ultimately it'd be sad for Everton. And they're the Northern us, and it just, well, like, what would we do without that one fixture where, like, it's just the same people, like the Spider-Man meme.
We would miss Spurs North for sure.
I enjoyed a bit of abuse for Frank singing Lampard, What's the Score? Was very fun. I was just sad. I don't think Jamie Redknapp was in the Sky Sports studio, was he? Because
no, it was Teddy who was telling Harry Kane he needs to leave
to see his. See his cousin looking so sad.
Teddy was so weird. He was like, oh, I'm impressed with Kane, but I'm not that impressed with Spurs. I'm like, that's a team that just won 5-0, you massive weirdo. But anyway, Jamie Carragher was like rhapsodizing about Kane, and that was quite lovely to see.
I feel like we've spent enough time worrying about Harry and his future in the last couple of episodes, so we'll stay off that and just enjoy the fact that he's hopefully. And actually, one thing on Kane, I was going to say, obviously he was in imperious form against Everton. I really enjoyed what Conte was saying after the game, though, when you know was basically set up to just sort of praise Kane by the interviewer, and he sort of instead said, obviously he's scored a couple and he's played amazingly well, but he also scored a couple against City and then didn't follow that up by scoring against Burnley. He then played really well against Leeds and scored and didn't follow that up with any goals against Borough. What he now needs to do is to follow up these amazing performances with another one straight afterwards if we're actually going to do anything. And he's obviously completely right, because Kane basically has to do this now for 12 consecutive matches if I think we've got any chance of top four, right?
So he went above Henry, didn't he, in the all-time stats. But I just had to double check, and he's got 10 for the season now. He's in double figures in the league for the season. I mean, if he can get anywhere near 20, that would be pretty incredible considering the start that he had to this season. Both like not even playing at first because he was kind of agitating for the move, and then it took him almost half the season to get going. Yeah, if he could push towards 18, 20 for the season, that would be incredible.
I think we're going to need him to hit 20. Yeah.
Just the last thing on Kane, actually, and sort of on Doherty as well, is that while that pass for Kane's second goal was obviously good, it is also one of those things where that's not a goal unless it lands on the boot of Harry Kane, really, is it? This is me saying XG's a nonsense one more time.
I will not, I'm sorry, I'm not going to have any anti-Matt Doherty talk. I think that man is now going to become, you know, the kind of Hakimi of sort of Spurs, thinking about last season's inter-team with Conte. I think that if he can play like he did against Everton, Matt Doherty, I think we might be in business, because that, you know, not having any sort of goals or assists or any impactful attacking play from wing back has really been the thing that's properly held us back. And if we can just muster something from Doherty and sort of Reguilon / Cesc down the other wing, we might. I mean, I feel like every other podcast, we're either like, Spurs are legit, we're going to finish top four, or it's, oh my God, we're terrible, we're in crisis, Conte's going to leave, it's dreadful. So I guess we need to be somewhere near in the middle, and we won't know until after United and Brighton.
Let's enjoy being at the top of the roller coaster today.
Exactly.
I think that's
exactly.
Do we want to talk about Cesc at all? I feel like he did pretty well. I feel like he can't defend. That's my concern.
He gets knocked off the ball very easily, doesn't he?
He loses the ball so easily. I thought his cross for the first goal was excellent.
Yeah, brilliant.
He made a brilliant run and a great cross. But he gets
timed perfectly. Like, it nearly went out. And then, sorry, carry on.
No, just wanted
to, I feel like we should kind of give him some credit before we ultimately tear him down.
That cross was brilliant. Yeah, like I'd forgot that it very nearly went out, didn't it? Yeah, and then he ran it, and it was at a pretty tight angle to get it into the box, really. But yeah, generally from that point on, he did get sort of muscled off the ball too often.
Anthony Gordon gave him a proper going over, I thought, in terms of the kind of general physicality that you face each week as a Premier League sort of full / wing back. I mean, I think the biggest problem is that he came off with another injury that seems to be, apparently, I don't know if they've actually come out and said what the prognosis is for it, but it's another sort of muscular thing. He just can't stay fit for sort of longer than, what, like 3-4 games. And I guess that's the biggest drawback with Cesc, is that he just cannot keep his body sort of together for a decent period of time. But Reguilon, I guess, maybe should be first choice anyway, perhaps, kind of. Who knows? I don't know. He scored.
I mean, it's not, like, it's fine, isn't it? It's not a problem, particularly,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
I'm not mad if Reguilon and Sessegnon kind of rotate, you know. Rose and Davis used to, although there was usually a European game in the kind of middle of the week. But I'm fine if, for now, they kind of share that spot.
So looking ahead to United, I assume Reguilón coming in for Cesc from the start will probably be the only change. But, you know, we do face a very tight run of games again. We know that the problem with Conte's Tottenham is when we have to play twice in a week. You know, if he has a week to prepare the team, they tend to win. If we have a midweek game, things tend to crash and burn. With that in mind, would you guys stick with the 11 that thrashed Everton and maybe sort of tweak it for Brighton on Wednesday if we're thinking United's the bigger game and they've had basically the whole week to rest up for that? Tom, what do you reckon?
We've got no depth, have we, really? There's we looking at the bench on Monday, we had no options really besides Lucas. So I think we have to stick with that 11 for United. If players are then exhausted, then we'll have to rest them for Brighton, which is obviously the less important game.
Right, Sam.
Yeah, there's no way around it really, is there? I don't think, I mean, what have we got, like a first 11 and then like, you know, one and a half other players really. So it's I was feeling so good thinking this, like, you know, this is amazing. We can just have a game a week now. And then literally like our next set of fixtures is three games in 8 days. So that's slightly stressful, but you know, yeah, one game at a time. I think this is it for that 11 straight in against United. And then just see, you know, like they should be able to at least, why am I even saying that? Let's just see what happens after that, basically, really. I mean, it's just, there's going to be more twists and turns, aren't there?
I also keep forgetting that the third game in that 8-day window is, you know, my feelings about this team. The third game is West Ham, isn't it, on the week Sunday. And yeah, that's a big worry. Although, admittedly, they haven't looked that good.
The good thing about playing West Ham, Bones injured, and the good thing about playing West Ham when we are is that they have the first leg of their Europa knockout game this week against Sevilla, and then the second leg is, what, 2-3 days before they play us. So they'll hopefully be pretty, unless they do some sort of madness in Spain.
They don't have much depth, do they? Moyes, they've, you know, there's been various sort of rows going on about how they should have strengthened in January and didn't. Antonio looks tired and Bowen's injured.
Yeah. So hopefully they'll be pretty tuckered out from that. But let's talk about United for a minute. Is this a good time to face them, particularly away from home? They'll be, I imagine, sort of driven on by a home crowd who sort of want, you know, to see a reaction from the City defeat. So they'll come for us, I imagine. Could we then do a sort of Man City away and pick them off smartly and efficiently on the break? Rosa, what do you think?
I don't have a great feeling about it just because we so rarely get anything at Old Trafford, but it's now or never really. And, you know, the last
Not remember last season? Do you not remember last season? 6-1.
You know what? Oh my God. That just feels like it didn't... That feels like it literally like happened years 5 years ago. Yeah. And I guess without a crowd, you're right. It still counts. But God, that was such an amazing day. I can't believe that literally had fallen out of my brain. See, what do I know? I had a bad feeling about Monday. I'd forgot about what happened last season at Old Trafford. So anything I say at this point is irrelevant, frankly. Ignore me.
It's absolutely not, because we have been guilty of freezing when we go to Old Trafford. I think it's weird, isn't it? Because we've had some really amazing results there, be it the 6-1. There was the Lucas sort of coming out party game where he got a couple of goals in that 3-0 that sort of helped see off Jose when he was United manager. There was the Tim Sherwood win there. There was the AVB one. But there's also been a lot of very insipid sort of turn up, lose 3-0, you know, don't put up much of a fight. And it could go either way.
I'm always instinctively worried about playing United. But I did watch them against City the other day and I briefly thought they were about to kind of come good. They're as inconsistent as us, really, aren't they? And that
with way less reason. They've spent so much money and they've got so much talent.
Well, talking of spending so much money, the Sancho's goal was brilliant the other day. It was like a real cracker of a goal. And I when they equalised, I thought, oh, here we go. Maybe United will start to look good now. And then they were terrible for the rest of the game. Maguire had a nightmare. I think that stat that was going round, the last 15 minutes of the game, City had 92% possession.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that was what G-Nev was getting irate about, and Keno. But yeah, I just keep thinking to myself, well, we've taken 6 points off City this season, so anything's possible. Fingers crossed. Hopefully they're awful again.
I mean, the biggest issue that United seem to have is people running at them in terms of having the sort of, you know, lumbering ocean liner that is Harry Maguire at the heart of their defence, plus, I guess, either Varane, if he's back, who looks a bit troubled by the Premier League at times, plus Wan-Bissaka, who's going through a bit of a dodgy spell, and Shaw's not always sort of massively up to it either at the minute by the looks of it. So you would hope the way that we like to play, particularly with the front three sort of getting their groove together as a trio, plus Bentancur starting off attacks, Matt Doherty maybe coming into some actual sort of decent form at long last. I don't want to say I'm feeling confident because I have been verbally assaulted for my confidence on this podcast before with very good reason. However, I think Spurs should go into that game with some confidence, particularly as, like Tom says, we've taken 6 points off City. We've basically set the blueprint for how to go to a decent team away from home in the victory over City a few weeks ago. So, I think so long as Kane and Son show up, and I think Kane, I've just got a feeling Harry's going to put in one of his sort of virtuoso kind of Etihad style performances. I think Spurs, if they're going to do it, if we're going to get top four, we've got to not lose, I think, at the very, very least.
It's a good time for us, you know. If we just leave aside the fact that it's United and Old Trafford, it is a good time for this Tottenham team to be playing a game of football. We've got everyone back, pretty much, that we need to have back. All of them looking in pretty decent form. So why not?
I think so. You know, our form has been so weird that you can look at it through different lenses. But that's three Premier League wins out of four now, which sort of feels bizarre considering the ups and downs of it all. But yeah, we'll see. Can I have a quick prediction from you both? Tom, prediction for the game?
You are. Don't ask us to predict anything, Charlie.
I have to ask a prediction. Come on.
Okay. Yeah, 2-1 with Kane being brilliant again.
So Kane with one goal. I want goal scorers as well, please. Go on. Let's go the full hog.
Okay, let's go Kane and Cooley then.
Okay, Rosa?
Okay, yeah. 3-2. Kane, Kulu and Bentancur.
Nice. I'm going to go 3-1. Kane with two and Christian Romero with a header from a corner.
I'd love to see that. Yeah, that'd be great. Very satisfying, that'd be.
Absolutely.
We do something from a corner because our corners haven't been great, have they, recently?
Let's have a quick chat about Spurs women. They had a hard-fought point against Champions League rivals Reading on the weekend, just gone. And it was a hard-fought point from the highlights I saw. I didn't see the game in full, but both teams had a real sort of boatload of chances by the look of it. We had some really, really, really glorious ones. Once again, it seems to be goals with us. I just had a look. We've scored 19 league goals in 15 games. We've only conceded 11, which is why we're fourth in the league, I guess. But that's just not enough. That's not enough goals, particularly, Rosa, considering the teams that we're about to face in the next few weeks, which I imagine will very much tell us whether or not Tottenham Hotspur are going to qualify for the Champions League.
Yep, this is a real season-defining run of games because it is City at home, then Arsenal away, then Chelsea away, which is a pretty brutal run. Yeah. You know, if we can get sort of... I mean, we beat City at the beginning of the season. Obviously, they were depleted then, but they kind of still haven't been that great in the league, I don't think. So that there's definitely possibility there. Probably, maybe, you know, who knows? Like a draw against the other two. Look, if we can get anything out of the next three fixtures, I think it'll be great. Like you said, if we squeak into Champions League places, it will be on the strength of the defence, really. So just maybe try not to concede any goals, I guess.
Yeah, it feels like not losing to City, considering the two games that come after that. And I think we're 5 points clear of City, who are in fifth behind us. They have a game in hand. So if we can keep that 5 point gap for now, you know, they obviously still have that game in hand, but considering who we're then against, it would be very useful to have a tiny bit of a buffer when we can hopefully then come through this really tough period and start to pick up a couple of wins. Or, of course, we might make history and go away at Arsenal and Chelsea and do what this team have been doing all season, which is kind of outstripping expectations. Who knows? And we wish Spurs women all the best for the next couple of matches, because it's going to be really, really, really tough. Cool. Let's move on to culture, guys. Tom, what are your culture picks this week, my friend?
I missed last week, so I probably should talk about Euphoria season 2. I think generally it's one of the best things on TV. It's up there with the best TV of the last 10 years, I think. The cast,
wow.
The cast are incredible. Mostly nearly all female leads who are just brilliant. And the direction and writing from Sam Levinson is great. The finale episode, be interesting if anyone, what other people think, tweet me. The finale episode was a bit of a mess. It was a bit all over the place. But Zendaya, our favourite American Spurs fan, shall we say that? She was just brilliant. And the cast generally, Sydney Sweeney, Hunter Scheffler, Barbie Ferreira, they were all just amazing. So I'm going to mention Euphoria. And then, I was the last parent in London to take their kids to Yayoi Kusama at the Tate on Monday.
Cool.
And that was really fun. It was kind of smaller than I expected. There's only really two infinity rooms there, these sort of light and mirror installations. But they were really cool. I was kind of hoping for some of those pumpkins that she does as well, you know, the spotty pumpkins. But that was great. And just finally, there's a new Over Mono track, which they've got a new EP coming, which is called Cash Romantic. But the new track from that is called Gunk. I feel like if Billy was here, he'd definitely be mentioning that. So new music from what are we calling them, house techno duo Over Mono, is always good news.
We like a bit of that on Hometown Glory. I'll stick with music. There's a new album coming from Ravina, who I really like. Ashes Awakening comes out soon. Thoroughly recommend keeping your ears open for that. Also, there's an album by an Irish artist called C-Mat. I think you say C-Mat. I'm not actually sure. It's spelled C-M-A-T, and I think it's just C-Mat. And I'm really, you know, when you're just like, you've never heard anyone say it out loud, and I'm too embarrassed to ask anyone. That's the predicament I'm in. But her album, If My Wife Knew I'd Be Dead, is really, really excellent. And then Maddie Diaz as well, I really like her. Last album, History of a Feeling, came out in 2021 last year, and she's got a new EP out with some guests and sort of reworked versions of songs from that album called Same History, New Feelings, which is really, really good. I also watched, I finally watched Shiver Baby, which has really stuck with me, and it's just so, so good. And I'm really annoyed that I didn't watch it sort of when all the buzz was happening around it or at the cinema. Its star, Rachel Sennott, also does stand-up, and I've hunted out some of her stand-up, and it's really, really good. I thoroughly recommend that. Rosa, your picks, please.
There's only one pick for me this week and possibly for the rest of time, because I finally saw Steven Spielberg's version of West Side Story, because it landed on Disney Plus last week. and it is a literal masterpiece.
Wow.
Now, I'm like primed to love it because I love West Side Story. I've seen the original movie a million times. I've seen it in the theater. I've got the original Broadway cast recording. Like listening to like the opening notes just sends like shivers up and down my spine. But it is a perfect, perfect film. The cast is impeccable. The staging is beautiful. The costumes are unbelievable. There's new choreography, which has quite a sort of a lot to live up to, given that the original choreography was by Jerome Robbins. And it's just unbelievably good. And it just hits sort of every note that you'd want it to hit. So you get a sense of New York, you get a sense of the lives that these people are living. They feel very real, even though it's obviously not a realistic setting. And the romance and the tragedy of it all completely hits. So I was in absolute, so I sort of went on this kind of complete roller coaster of emotion, really. I was sort of thrilled. And then by the end, I was just like a, you know, crumpled heap. I love that, you know, like Steven Spielberg, I sort of didn't really know why he wanted to do it. And when I watched it, I thought, I get it now, because he's made changes to it, but you can tell those are the sorts of changes he's really thought about, and they make a lot of sense. And they add sort of depth in places and a different perspective in places. And also, I think, kind of watching it again, realizing how many, like all the performances are impeccable. And I sort of realized he's actually something I don't think he gets necessarily that much credit for, is that he's a great actor's director. Like, can you think of a Spielberg movie that has a bad performance in it? I don't think I can. And I think he was also working with his longtime like director of photography on this as well. So it just looks so beautiful. Like the light is incredible, the color. I wish I'd seen it in the cinema, and I think because obviously it's been nominated for Oscars, I imagine it'll get sort of another kind of limited release.
Hopefully it'll get a re-release, yeah.
Yeah, so I think I'll go and watch it in the cinema. I've already watched it again since I watched it last Friday. I honestly, you know, it's a perfect movie for me, but I just...
Rosa, I've kind of... gone on a musicals journey in the last few years. I thought I didn't like musicals. I think one Christmas I caught the Guys and Dolls with Sinatra and Marlon Brando, and like now I could just watch that film on repeat. It's so good. And then I saw Hamilton and you know, a few Lin-Manuel Miranda things that have influenced my love of musicals, my newfound love of musicals. I've never seen the West Side Story original. Should I go and watch the original before the Spielberg, or should I just go in blind straight into Spielberg's new one?
No, do you know what? Just watch the Spielberg version. Like like there's time enough to watch the original as well. I think that's fine, because it will just give you different things. Like there's not, I don't think you'll watch the old one and think, oh God, this is, you know, there's bits of it that are dated, but I think it stands up still so well. Like the original Bernardo in the 61 film, George Takiris is still like the most charismatic dude you'll ever see on screen. And the guy they have in the new one, like, does match up to him. I looked him up afterwards, and he was like one of the original Billy Elliots in the Broadway production, and he's like the youngest Tony Award winner ever. So he absolutely has like the skill and the charisma and the talent, but you won't be disappointed by watching the older version either.
I've heard the female lead is really good. Was she was in the Heights, right? The other Lin-Man musical, the film.
Yeah. Version. So obviously, so there's do you mean Ariana DeBose, who is Anita? Or,
yes. Cause,
yeah. Oh, my God. Okay, so she is obviously going to win, like, multiple awards over her lifetime. She's also in the Apple TV musical Schmigadoon, which was very inconsistent, but she had, like, the standout number from it. So it's worth tracking it down for that. Yeah, she's unbelievably good. She has just everything, like... like charisma, charm, like she can sing, she can dance. That's the thing about what makes West Side Story such a great, it's the perfect musical in my opinion, because you don't just get the singing, you get the dancing as well. And I love dance pretty much as I love football. So again, it's perfect. But the girl they discovered for Maria is also, she's like 18 when they filmed it. And
I think, like you said as well, it kind of, it feels like a weird choice for Spielberg because he's so far into his career. Why, like, you know, there are so many remakes out at the moment and everything is either from a franchise or it's a remake of an old film. It seemed like an unusual choice, but it's amazing that it's so far into his career. I've seen people say it's Spielberg's best film in 20, 30 years.
Yeah,
How did it review? Because I feel like it passed me by ever so slightly, not being a huge West Side Story fan.
I think it got really good.
Much about it.
I saw really good reviews for it, and some critics were saying it's Spielberg's best in, I don't know, since Schindler's List or Jurassic Park or something.
Yeah, I think it just didn't do that well in the cinema for some reason. Maybe it just, like, the timing of it. And maybe people would, I don't know, sort of COVID. I think it got released just as like Omicron. Hit, possibly. So I think as well, watching it as a sort of older person, the tragedy really, really, really hits. You know, I will also watch like pretty much any version of Romeo and Juliet as well. Like I'm a massive, I'm just a sucker for that sort of tragic romance anyway. So, but this really, you just feel the sort of waste of lives, really. I mean, this, you know, spoiler alert, but not really, like people die at the end. It's really tragic. And I think, you know, it feels like it should be sort of a young person's musical, but it's not. And I think that's something that as obviously a much older director, he could still bring to it. And it's interesting watching it, as a sort of comparison to Hamilton. And I feel like it was such a shame that they just recorded like a staging of Hamilton rather than, I feel like that's definitely, because you realize what you can do now with setting a musical actually in the streets.
Yeah, I've always thought that was interesting that they filmed the stage version of Hamilton. They also filmed it with the original cast and then only released it sort of 4 or 5 years later.
Yeah.
And technology has moved on so much. I wonder if at some point there'll be a live action version of Hamilton, because I'd love to see it as a Hamilton super fan.
Yeah, it'll be your West Side Story.
Yes. Charlie, sorry, just while we're on culture and before we end, you mentioned an album title there that was like the best album title of all time.
Are you going to make me butcher CMAT's name again? Just to sort of show up the fact that I still don't know. I could have like gone away during that sort of period of time and checked on the internet how to pronounce the name.
I mean, we wanged on about musicals for a while, so you could have checked it.
So she's from Dublin. She's great. Her album is called If My Wife Knew I'd Be Dead. And interestingly, she's spelled new N-E-W, not K-N-E-W.
I briefly thought that was the best album title of all time, and now the missing K has ruined it for me.
I know. You know, I was listening to it at my desk the other day, and Emily, my wife, wandered by and looked over my shoulder at what I was listening to. And she said exactly that. She was really, really annoyed by the spelling of new and was like, it's always got to be so punny, hasn't it?
Yeah, I'm a pedant. So sorry, CMAT, if that is your name. You briefly had the best album title of all time, and I've taken that accolade away from you.
She is really good, though. It's a sort of lovely, like, country pop kind of indie fusion. And it's she's sort of very smart lyricist and sort of wryly melodic throughout. It's great. It's really, really good. But yeah, maybe just spell new the right way next time. Anyway,
yeah, Stephen Sondheim and Leonard Bernstein would never. Just go say that.
Spell. Exactly. Say what you like about Sondheim, he could spell.
Thank you all for listening to our Everton and musical special of Hometown Glory. I hope everyone's enjoyed that. Tom and Rosa, thank you so much for your company, as always. We'll look forward to the next couple of Spurs games for both the men's and women's teams, and we will all talk to you next week. Billy's not here, so Tom, you can see us out with our customary farewell.
Up the Spurs!
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.